What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I have a very, very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very gifted and prolific musician. He is a musical genius when it comes to performing and producing, and for the past three decades has displayed what it means to be a well-diverse musician. Please welcome legendary jazz keyboardist, music producer, and artist, Mr. George Duke. How's it going, George?
I'm doing great, man. Just trying to make a living over here.
Oh, man, I hear that, man. Well, welcome back to my show, man. I appreciate you coming back and chopping it up with me again, man. It's truly an honor, as always.
My pleasure.
You know, George, I got a hold of the new CD, Deja Vu, and my God, man, hit after hit on that track, man. I just can't begin with to tell you what's my favorite, but I got four of them I like to share with you.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Man, the first one, when I put it on, I went through the tracks, and what gravitated to me, man, was the What Goes Around Comes Around track.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man. You know what? It was the chord progressions, the arrangement, the way you played them. It was just phenomenal, man. It's personally, you know, what I call your signature style playing, you know, the stuff that really I like. What you do as a jazz keyboardist, man, it's just phenomenal.
Right.
The second.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I actually wrote that with Everett Hart.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Who's actually playing on the track? You know, he's I produced his album, his last album, which is more of a jazz record, and this was one of the tunes that was actually originally written for his album that didn't go on the album. And so I took it. I said, Everett, I kind of like this, though, even though it didn't quite work with what he was doing. And I took it and, elongated it a little bit and added another section and worked on it while he was over in Europe doing a tour. And, he came in and played on it and then went back on tour. And then I worked on it some more and kind of changed it around and made it a little more of a Duke thing.
Wow. Well, man, it definitely stands out.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, that was me playing the drums, too.
Really?
Hello, didn't know that, did you?
Wow.
No, it was computer drums, though, but I tried to make it sound as real as possible. You know?
Well, programming, man, you're an excellent programmer, so you fooled me.
Yeah.
You know, the other track, man, Bring Me Joy, I love the intro to that track, man. You know, I see that you're using some of those monophonic synth patches on a lot of your tracks these days, man, and, you know, I'm a huge fan of synthesizers, as you know. And, you know, it was that solo sign, man. I can't, you know, put my finger what type of patch it is, but it has a really warm feeling, which you did over the track with it, man, and it definitely stands out as well.
Right, yeah, that's I wanted to go back and use some of those old instruments we used to use, you know, the Arp Odysseys, the mini Moogs and all that, and kind of do one note at a time kind of thing as opposed to polyphonic synths. But I mixed them up and used both, you know, but that has a particular character. As you know, of sound, when you know that a lot of people call it that Stevie Wonder sound, but we all, you know, Herbie, me, we were all kind of doing that at the same time, that kind of vibe, where because we couldn't. We had no other way to do it.
Right.
You had to play one note at a time if you wanted to make a chord.
Right.
So, but each individual note in the chord has a particular character, which gives you another vibe. I dig it.
Oh, yeah. And vocally, man, I want to talk about 6 O'Clock Revisited. Man, the melody of the vocals. First thing I thought was take 6 on the beginning of the track, man.
No, that was me doing, you know, stacking myself.
Oh, man, George, your vocals are just, man, they're on point, man. I think a lot of people don't really know the vocal side of what you can do, man, as an artist.
Yeah, well, I'm pulling that back a little bit, you know, and concentrating more on the other thing. But, you know, I decided to let it out on that one.
Right. Now, finally, man, Ripple in Time. Now, this particular track, George, took me back, man, to the Miles Davis days on the 2-2 album, you know, with Marcus Miller. Man, this is where I got my suspended chords that I play off that whole album, man. You guys are just hitting those suspended chords on the track. I think it was like a Vox type of voice choir on the 2-2.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Man, you revisited that on this track, man. Oh, definitely brought back a lot of memories, man.
Yeah, that was a period of time when some fans of Miles, you know, kind of put that period down, you know, when he had played some suspended kind of chords over a funk groove, you know.
Yeah.
And but I, you know, hey man, I worked with Miles during that period, and I think it was a very creative period. Miles was still Miles, you know, and I worked on 2-2, I worked on a Mandolin, and I wanted, you know, he was such an important figure to me that I wanted to do a tribute to him on this album. Because, you know, this whole album is about going back, Deja Vu, looking at old styles of music that I love coming up and look at it from my point of view right now. Different than Dookie Treats, because that's the same concept, but that was a little more on the right. This album was a little more on the left, just a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dookie Treats, definitely, it was funky, especially Creepin'. That was probably one of the funky tracks I heard in a long time. And but this particular album, I thought, had really a retro-flavored funk soul to it on this track. You know, on top of your heavy synths and things that you know, definitely the soulful melodies from the 70s. Yeah, it definitely had that retro flavor on it, man.
I don't know. There's a lot of jazz in here, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? A lot of jazz. A lot of jazz. Yes, yes. You know, what was your mission for the CD, man? What was the concept behind Deja Vu, bringing these retro-style jazz tracks and funk tracks together on Wax?
Well, you just said it, really. That's really kind of what the answer is, you know. It's basically to make some music that I like. You playing styles of music that I like, making it diverse, because it's still got a lot of diversity for what I would normally do. And you know, that's really essentially what it is. Making a collection of songs which are kind of diverse, you know, like my live shows and like the albums that I normally do. But this one, I wanted to have a little more playing, you know. So there are tunes on here, you know, like Deja Vu, for example. The last one was kind of like a Mahavishnu orchestra kind of vibe, where I get a chance to really stretch out in terms of playing the synth. Like a synth guitar kind of thing. Stupid Is a Stupid Does, a tune where I can just, everybody in the band gets a chance to play, really.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, it's like the way we used to record.
You know, George, you and I come from a heavy church background as musicians. You know, I started off as a guitar player and a keyboardist and playing in church band. Now, talk a lot about, you know, ear development, the improv skills that you learn being in a church band, and also reading your fellow bandmates to build that relationship. And how has that impacted your style as a musician, you know, playing with Frank Zappa and also merging onto your own band?
Oh, well, it was everything. I mean, besides, you know, the message, you know, the important thing for me was learning how to play where you support the pastor. I mean, it's like the musicians, and I would just watch the organist on the other side of the pulpit when I was like 12, 13 years old when I began playing in the church, and they actually allowed me to play in the main sanctuary, you know, where I was looking at him, find out what he did, you know, and I would say, oh man, he's building this up here and there. The preacher would say something, and he would go play something on the organ, and it was soulful, you know. And I figured out there's a relationship here between what's being played and what the people are feeling about, you know, what the pastor's saying or whatever. It's all integrated, and so that was a big learning experience. And that's where I first learned how to play soulful, besides listening to Ray Charles, and that was my first entrance into jazz, was hearing his kind of soulful form of jazz.
Right.
You know, Ray Charles, Les McCann, that kind of stuff, that which eventually led to me playing funk.
Wow. It's a great combination. That's where that came from. You know, but it's a great combination because, you know, I feel that was like my first audience. You know, my church members and, you know, people come to hear you play. And
oh, yeah.
You know, so I tell everybody coming up, I was like, man, if you have the opportunity, start playing in the church, get your chops ready. You know, you really get a chance to get that exposure playing in a live environment, and also get to feed off of the audience as a musician.
That's right. You know, the congregation. These people, man, some of the best musicians come out of the church experience. Right now, that's most of the musicians that I use on the road, that's their tradition. That's where they come from. Because I know they understand what I'm talking about.
Right. Especially musically. Sanctified.
Yeah, I can't just have guys playing live. I mean, I like to play a lot of notes and all that, too. But there's got to be something behind that.
Definitely.
You know, and another kind of attitude. You know, and the music is about attitude, you know.
Totally. Speaking of attitude, man, I want to talk to you a little bit about synth patches. You know, when you hear a particular synth patch or tone, do you really get inspired to play it a certain way? And do you really build your songs around that patch sound? I mean, is that where the direction comes for you on the synths?
You know, sometimes not as much as it used to. I try not to let the sound now get in the way of songwriting, you know, and just use the whatever ever timbres that I have in a song, let that be supportive to whatever the song is. So I try to write the song first. But there are other times when, you know, you can play a sound and it'll lead you in a whole different direction. And so I understand that, but I try to balance the two. I think that's kind of what's important. You know, for me, I mean, for a song, for example, like Ripple in Time, the thing from Miles, that thing kind of came out of that synth sound. You know, so that came first. I heard the groove out of that. You know, so that's a case where the timbre came first, no doubt about it.
Right.
But I already knew what I wanted to do when I did that, you know.
So still sticking to that foundation and basic melody building and just going from there and adding those sounds to give that flavor later on in your compositions. I got you.
Yeah, that's right. I generally try to write. In a normal situation, I pretty much would write the song first, you know, and then and let the orchestration, at least the large part of it, come later.
Nice. You know, George, I got to ask you, man, you've been out there a while, and I always look up to you as the head honcho for compositions, and also ear maturity. Now, talk a little bit about ear maturity. Did you feel that your ear got more developed, matured as you got older as a player, or do you feel that you started off early and it was just ready there? Because I talk to some guys, and they're always questioned, like, man, so how do you hear a song right away and know where it is? And I said, well, man, I visualize the chords and the progressions. You know, I try to in my head, and, you know, then I try to transpose that and bring that to the board when I'm in front of it. What are some of the tools that you've done as a jazz keyboardist to develop your ear the way it is?
Well, you're absolutely right. Visualization is very important. I mean, for anything. If you can't see yourself doing something, you're probably not going to be able to do it very well. You know, there's sometimes if I have something that's new that I need to do, I have to actually visualize those chords, visualize me doing it. And that in itself is practice, is mental practice, you know, which gets you ready for the physical thing, but even more so in some cases than actually sitting there practicing. You know, so I think it's as important, that visualization. But right when I first started out, there wasn't nothing happening in terms of my ear. I mean, I used to rush. I play, you know, my time was not good. I had to learn how to play in time and then learn how to stretch that from there, learn how to, you know, to play like behind the beat, learn how to play in the beat, and then learn how to play on top of the beat and mix them up wherever I felt like it was necessary to do that. You know, because the combination of the three is what makes music work to me. That gives you that tension. You know, music without tension and release doesn't mean a lot. It's just all the same. It's like a monotone.
Right.
But that took me a long time to develop. It was not natural. You know, I mean, that took a lot of practice and a lot of experience, just sitting in there trying to figure out what made music work and why some particular music sounded different than others. See, that was the main thing. And then copying.
Right.
So, but my ear... Man, I had to really develop my ear. I studied in school a thing called musicianship, and that's where the teacher had us actually sing parts. You know, we would have a piece of music in front of us, and we had to go da, da, da. And so he knew we could actually hear the intervals without playing them. But some people couldn't sing. I knew they had trouble. I knew some of those cats could actually hear it. I said, oh, they hear it, but they just can't sing it.
Right.
You know, so there's a... But anyway, the ear training is really, really important.
Yeah, I agree.
However you do it.
You know, I get all questions all the time. It's like, well, how do you know how to distinguish what note is actually being hit without listening to the entire mix? And I think that just comes from listening to a lot of covers, writing a lot, and really focusing on the melody of the song. You know, because, you know, sometimes we can get away with, yeah, you can play the song right away. It might have been that progression you might have heard from another song. You know, so it's memorable to you and you kind of feel where it is on the board immediately. But some songs, you know, have a lot of ghost notes and, you know, depending on the mix, there's something else that's on top of it stacked. You know, maybe it's a half step on top of it that, you know, I think a lot of guys are missing. And, you know, develop that ear training, you know, it is important.
Right.
You know, and over time.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That's a study there.
It is.
That whole ear training and learning voice leading and all of that. That's a serious thing.
It is. You know, as far as your compositions, George, I want to ask you and teach me as well, finding new creative ways for bridges to songs. You know, I feel that, you know, having the main write of the song, you know, between the 8-bar and 16 bars, whatever it is, and then coming in to a bridge that has a relationship of the main write and making a marriage between the two together. Man, and one song that sticks out that you done is "Stay With Me Tonight" by Jeffrey Osborne.
Oh, I didn't write that though.
Really?
But I produced it. Yeah, that was a Raymond Jones, who's a good songwriter. Yeah.
But the actual chords and progressions, did he write that, or did you play that or arrange that? Or
no, that was random.
Wow.
I think I played some synth and stuff on there, but the basic track he had together. But still, the process, what you're talking, excuse me, the process you're talking about is an important one. You know, if you're going to have a bridge in a song, you know, and sometimes for me, bridges or interludes or release, sometimes I call them release sections, are based on what you're trying to say lyrically. If it's a song. You know, if it's an instrumental tune, then you can kind of take some other liberties sometimes, you know.
Right.
But sometimes it has to, I think it has to be based on the story you're trying to tell and what lyric you're using, you know, because if you need something to build up into another section, if you change your key, you know, to come out of the bridge or whatever you're doing, that might affect what you do in terms of the bridge, how it works. You know, all that affects on how a song eventually digested, so to speak.
Sure.
You know, the tension and release, where you release certain things, the phrasing, it's all so important, you know, and eventually that has to become intuitive.
Sure.
That's all it is. It's just intuition, and it's no different than playing on stage, and you kind of know sometimes it's time to lay out, time to let it go. You know, you can't just keep playing the same thing over and over and over and over again. So, and same thing with songwriting. You know, there has to be some kind of hills and valleys.
Okay.
And the bridge can connect those two sections. How do you know what's the right bridge? You know what? A lot of that is experience. A lot of that, like I said, is based on your lyric. It's probably easier to demonstrate than it is to talk about. That's what music sometimes is so difficult to talk about.
It is. Yeah, it's definitely.
You know, because it's a spiritual medium.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a spiritual medium. And well, for me, it's what moves me. I figure if it moves me, it's going to move somebody else somewhere.
Right.
Somebody may not like it, but somebody's going to like it. And I try to make it, you know, if it makes my head snap, well, you know, then I'm generally pretty cool. If you know what I mean.
Right, definitely.
Makes me say, oh my goodness. If I can say, oh my goodness, then I know I got something.
Oh yeah, you can just feel it inside of you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I got you. You know, as a keyboardist, man, I gotta ask you, what are some of the things that you still practice, like runs or progressions, or are you the type, I mean, now at this level of your expertise in playing, man, I'm pretty sure you're just doing a lot of rehearsing material and, you know, just rehearsing with the band and things, but I mean, do you still find yourself practicing some of your scales and runs and
practice? What's that? Man, I did enough practice when I was coming up. No, you know what? I wish I had the time to practice. I was doing another interview earlier, and we were talking about that exact thing. And it's unfortunate that I don't have the time to practice now. I just haven't made myself take that time out of my day to do that. But when I do, sometimes it's sound checks, sometimes it's mental. If I'm on an airplane or on a tour bus, you know, I mentally practice, which is a lot for me. You know, I have to visualize myself playing these things. But sometimes you have to actually physically, you know, work something out. And I will practice certain scales that I know that I can execute better.
True.
You know, so I'll do that, but not a concerted, like, hour a day or 2 hours a week. I haven't found myself able to do that for a long time, actually, which is unfortunate.
Well, I can't tell, man.
Yeah, my fingers know, though.
Oh, man. You know, it's one of those things, you know, it's like, man, your mind is going there, but sometimes that reach just doesn't act as quick as your brain does. You know, so you try to, you know, there's other
for a while and go back
there
on tour, and it's like, man, it takes me a few days to get back to where I was.
Right.
You know, but that's what it is. And, of course, live performance is totally different than practice. You know, it's
sure.
Like playing basketball or something. It's, you know, live game has got nothing to do with practice.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
You go through the motions, but once you get in the game, then you see, then that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right. Yeah. No, I usually hear, man, it's like if I feel like I'm slacking on practicing, I usually see my speed going first before anything.
Right.
<know?
laughs> Yeah.
So, George, what is on the musical agenda for 2010, man?
Well, you know, I'm going to be, I'm actually working with this Russian artist, which we're mixing right now. Just walked out of the studio to talk to you. Her name is Larisa Dolina. She's a very popular artist in Russia. So I'm finishing that album. And then I'm going to be working on a Montreux DVD that I cut last year. Some footage with a lot of special guests. Lee Ritenour is on it. We got Rochelle Farrell, Chaka Khan, and my band, expanded band, actually. We got the Cubanismo horns from Cuba and full horns, you know, full vocal section and all of that. And all live and very nice. So I'm going to work on mixing that. And then Al Jarreau and I are going to go out and do some trio dates, just trio and Al. Wow. You know, some scale down. We're doing some music that we used to do back in the day. And, you know, won't be any reach for the Doogie stick in there.
Nice.
But know, I got to change up every now and then.
Well, man, you know, you and Al Jarreau, man, you guys are just like a dynamic duo when it comes to putting these CDs together. All the work that you've done in the past work, man, is timeless to me. And to know that you guys are getting back together, man, I definitely want to know what's going on with that.
Yeah, well, we're just, you know, we're doing weekends for a bit, and then we're in October. I think August, September, and October, we're going to do some more concerted dates, only in the United States at this point.
Nice. Well, George, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man, again. And it's always an honor for me to, you know, get that one-on-one time with you, man. I really appreciate it. And you're definitely welcome back to come on the show anytime and talk about your new endeavors, man.
All right, Spud. I really appreciate that, man.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
Take it easy.
All right, Spud.
Bye. And a big shout out to George Duke for coming on the show again and chopping it up with me for the second time. And, you know, it's always inspiration for me every time I talk to George, man. You know, the information that he gives me as a keyboardist and as a producer and just an overall musician, it's always different and it's always new and fresh. And it's always good to get his angle and perspective on things, especially for compositions and just the overall outlook over the project. And just to have him back for the second time, man, is, you know, it's just, again, truly inspirational, man. I can't get enough of him when I talk to him, man. So, you know, we can just go on for hours. And his CD is just phenomenal. And the title of it is called Deja Vu. And like he mentioned in the interview, man, it's going back to some of his old styles of music and, you know, bringing those together in one complete package on the CD. And again, we touched on a lot of the older stuff that he did with Miles Davis and some of his earlier methods of work that he's done in the past with the monophonic synths and the polyphonic synths and how he's bringing those together in his composition. It's just truly phenomenal. And for more information on George, man, you got to go to his website and get updates and his tour dates and projects that he's doing. And the website is www.georgeduke.com. And again, that's www.georgeduke.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well at www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. Again, www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And I also run a podcast on iTunes. So if you have an iTunes player on your computer or an iPhone, just go to the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spudtootight@gmail.com. Again, that's spudtootight@gmail.com. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background to close out the show. And it's off of George Duke's new CD, Deja Vu. And the title of the track is called Ripple in Time. And it's a heavy track. I know you're going to enjoy it. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.